exactly to meet students exactly where they are. I try to, but it's challenging, right? And so I think that, but also I can provide obviously like a sort of a lens through an academic and combination of, you know, real world knowledge that is unique. But I also think students themselves, the ones who are engaged, can provide something unique, is what you're kind of providing. And I do think it's more important, and I wish that those groups would be more active and that they would be ideally less partisan than what I've seen. But that's just sort of the nature of the game, I guess, right? So
What specific issues do you think that students that might be listening out there should be maybe paying attention to or should be looking into more for the upcoming federal election?
Yeah, so I would urge students to think about, well, first of all, you know, it depends on what your immediate goals are. You would imagine that for most students, it's entering the labor market. It's trying to find to gain independence from their parents. I mean, not everybody, but some people want that, whether it's renting or potentially buying in the future. A lot of students are interested in, continue to be interested, and they should be, in climate change and what a future government is, how they're going to manage environmental concerns. Again, something that's fallen off the agenda, but something that students, especially at this age, should and continue to be vigilant about holding their government to account. So those are, you know, three good ones that I can think of, right? And all of those things, I would say that let's imagine that the polls play out as they are and we have a Polyev-led conservative majority. I'm not sure that he has really spoken about any of those things in a way that would give students clear knowledge as to what he plans to do. Yeah, you know, we have on housing, we have, you know, build the houses, right? And, you know, there are obviously policy ideas related to sort of dealing with municipalities in a way that's more strict and sort of things like that. It isn't particularly different from what has been done in the past, or whether or not who copied who is not really my concern at this point. But to sort of answer your question, I do think that to really make that happen, especially in our bigger cities, I'm not sure that I've really heard a particular kind of, you know, unique solution yet. And I think that students should be vigilant about sort of looking into that and sort of demanding that kind of answer. They should be interested. They should also be for a country that's stalling in its productivity as to what is, you know, what does a future government have to say about that? Why has it happened? And what are they doing to sort of get us back on track so the economy can create more jobs that students can enter, right? Is that there's only so much value in a sort of knowledge-based education, even if it's not specific to a certain discipline, but there is value to it if there is an economy that's dynamic and creating jobs in different areas that we don't quite know yet. That's where a university education in anything can make you more of a viable candidate to get that job. But if our community is not creating those things and we're only resource dependent, that's not necessarily going to be good for those students who are coming out of university. So they need to be vigilant about that. And yeah, but the environment, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. I mean, seems to be a consensus that the consumer-based carbon tax is dead. I don't have a strong opinion one way or another, but the point is, I think that we need to understand more. Okay, if that's not working, then what is going to work? It's not just that, oh, this didn't work, so let's give up. What is going to work, right? Yeah. So those are, I think, the things I would want to know if I was a student.
Yeah, okay, very, very interesting. With now BC being an NDP government again after the election, beyond kind of like tuition and funding, what long-term educational reforms are you wanting to see as a professor?
I would love to see more. Well, I'd like to see smaller classrooms. I do think that, you know, the era of the sort of big lecture might be dead. I don't know if it's not fully dead, but I do think, having been teaching for over a decade now, that I've really seen the limits of what I can offer my students in the large lecture setting. There's something to it. I'm not saying it, you know, it's not completely ineffective, but we can do better than this. I also think that there needs to be stronger ties between the labor market and universities. Not to say that we want to become trade schools. I think that is probably a recipe for disaster, because we can't train people to do jobs we don't even know exist yet, or to move through the labor market fluidly if we teach them how to hammer in it. I mean, people need to learn. There are people who need to go to the trades and that's great, and do other things. But those who go to university need to be broadly educated, you know, able to sort of have both quantitative reasoning skills, writing skills, logical thinking skills, critical thinking skills, communication skills, both verbally and written, even as though, and learn to use AI effectively to complement their own intelligence. And these kinds of things, I think, are challenging for professors to provide, because we, you know, the demands of sort of our jobs administratively and research and teaching and all these things without a lot of help to how to move things, how to make things better for students without a lot of feedback from the labor market is challenging, right? And I think a lot of professors end up sort of falling back on what they've always done. And I think for many feel like it's ethically wrong to continue doing that, but don't really have much sort of wiggle room to try to improve things. Because, you know, ultimately we do know that in educated societies tend to be wealthier and more productive than ones that aren't. So it's not like we shouldn't shut down universities. And it sounds like I have a vested interest, but I do think that's like just logically true. But we do need to do better at actually having a more dynamic approach to curriculum and teaching than we do now.
I find it interesting that you speak about having smaller class sizes, because one thing I've noticed in my lectures back home is I do sociology and criminology, which combines two different kind of degree areas. And we also have people from like media and communications taking the same modules as us. So we end up sitting in a lecture room of like close to 200 people. And I find that sitting in there is very little engagement, active discussion, or anything with the professors. The lecturers will end up asking a question, and if no one wants to contribute, they just move past it. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if potentially reducing the size of that, people would be more interested in speaking up and having a discussion, because you're not just sat like at the back, like a speck in the room, because of how big all the classes are.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a question then. Mm. I mean, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no.
Considering the SFU, your time at SFU, have you taken any classes that have tutorials associated with the lectures? And how have you found those to be a complement to your learning?
Yeah, see, I'm technically not a student here. Okay. I'm just working at the station. So yeah, I haven't actually attended any lectures or classes or anything. But from the people that I've spoken to about what they say, they seem way more actively engaged than any of my friends at uni, or even I would say myself at uni, in lectures. Hmm. And the way that they have way more of a rapport with their professors than we do. I find university back home, the professors are more like the teachers in high school. You don't really see them outside of the classroom. You don't really go up and talk to them afterwards. You just go to your next class. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how the university system for me and my friends, of what we've spoken about, is. I have a friend that does psychology, and she sits in a room of over 500 students for her lectures. And she's like, no one talks. We don't do group presentations. We sit, we listen to the lecturer, read their slideshow, and then we go. And that's it.
Right. I wonder if there's some... I would say that I'm happy to be at SFU compared to, say, larger schools where there's a little bit more engagement through tutorials. I do think that some of that benefit is undermined by the fact that it's a commuter campus and we tend to not have students who are around enough to actually sort of take advantage of it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think that that's like a major a problem and something that, you know, if you first part of the learning process and mentorship can only happen if there is, right, you know, you build relationships with those teachers. It's not going to happen in every class, but there should be multiple opportunities to do that throughout your degree. And I do think that, you know, that's something that SFU does better than, you know, some schools that I know I have colleagues who work at. It's not the best. We could be better. And I think there's more work to be done. But I also wonder, and this is another question for you, like, I guess you haven't been in classes, hard to say, but I do think there might be a cultural difference, because I've heard things about the UK university system that sort of like the professors are treated and expected to be more distant because that's the sort of culture of university there, rather than here, where they're at least younger professors tend to be a bit more cognizant of the fact that engagement and sort of teaching students at their level and is just a good thing to do. It doesn't make you, you know, it's not... Your job is not to demonstrate how smart you are to them, but to engage with them. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not into, I don't really know. I mean, I think it's become much more of a shared experience with friends I have at different universities in the UK, where we all kind of have this idea that we don't really get to speak to our lecturers or professors. There's not much rapport going on. When I spoke to my parents when they went to university like 30 years ago in the UK as well, and they said it was very different for them. They spoke a lot with their professors. They had rapport, but they also said that was at a time where not everyone was going to university. Now it's pretty much expected most people, after they've done their exams, are going to university. Very little will go on to straight into working or apprenticeship or something. University is like more of the path to follow.
Mm-hmm.
So they wondered if potentially it's just because more people are at university. There's more people. What's been quite interesting for me is coming over here, I have a supervisor that I keep in contact with at my university, and he has three students that are out on placements doing what I'm doing. And that's the most rapport that I've had with a professor in what is now my third year at the university, which I find quite interesting. Is it's when I'm away and they actually have designated you to a professor that you actually end up having more of a rapport with them. And he's been my lecturer for 2 years, so I've been in his classes before as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just quite interesting how different it plays out here at university from what I've spoken to people versus back home, because I think it's treated very differently, university. And I think also students don't make as much of an effort now to try and build that rapport with professors or ask questions. There's a lack of interest to engage in the lectures and just to go out and do reading and then just write the essay that way, rather than like a genuine vested interest in potentially the topic or expanding knowledge by talking to the person that's the expert in it and talking to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat today. I know we've been trying to get this set in stone for a little bit of time.
Yeah, no, sorry about that. The end of December is a tough time to find the time. And, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad we could have this chat, and thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Take a look at our program lineup at cjsf.ca to discover the diverse range of contents we bring to you.
attention. Love is a pension, a pantry, but not a pill. Why make comparisons? Why make an auctioneer tamp down on his spiel? He's both his feet and breath and right at that cliff. The gurgling man with the club and the knife, with the angel eyes pouring out of hands. That's why I'm rolling. I'm rolling to be sure. That's why I'm rolling.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That was new music from Frog Eyes off their upcoming record, The Open Up. They're back. That one is called I See the Same Things. And we're going to move on now to a piece from our community journalist, Danny, right after this.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started, so I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Thank you.
Reporting from Burnaby, British Columbia, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. The Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, or SFPIRG, is a student-led organization at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia, that focuses on issues regarding social and environmental justice. SFPIRG also provides political education services, and on January 14th, 2025, the organization held a radical book fair titled Rebel Reads that included various titles all pertaining to SFPIRG's focuses of social and environmental justice. CJSF took a trip down to the fair to learn more about what it had to offer, and we were able to gain some insight from Noelle, SFPIRG's Director of Engagement.
The idea for this book fair actually came from one of our board members. We wanted to kind of like bring some of the books that we had like kind of removed from circulation in our library just because they were like maybe a bit older or folks like weren't sort of checking them out or they weren't getting the love that they deserved. So we wanted to bring them out here today. And we've got a ton of titles, honestly. We're really trying to get them off our hands. So we're selling them for like $3, but also it's pay as you can. So folks can kind of just like get at really good ideas. Because I think it's also just really important, I think, given the kind of like moment that we're in, to be like reading material and literature that is like conscious, political, and sort of directing people toward radical and revolutionary change.
Afterwards, we further discussed how SFPIRG curated this specific collection of books to include for the Radical Book Fair.
These books came from a while back. Like, we sort of removed them from circulation before I actually started working at the PIRG. So, like, 2 years ago. And so it's kind of a hodgepodge. There's like a lot of different stuff here, but all sort of like things that had arrived in our library because folks had kind of named an interest in them originally. So things that student boards and folks on the board in the past had sort of identified as important to read or as relevant to the kind of political interests of people at the time.
Lastly, we asked what the SFU community response has been to this Radical Book Fair and if SFPIRG has any other plans in the future for similar events.
We've had like lots of folks just like coming by and kikiing over the reads. We would definitely love to do more stuff like this, especially because, again, like, it's just nice to have, like, radical literature be shared with folks so that people can be, like, elevating their consciousness on campus, bringing it to their classrooms, elevating kind of the sort of politics of their discussion.
Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Thank you so much for tuning in to this segment, which would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada. You can also listen to this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Razor sharp. This is Bird Note. One of the most evocative bird voices belongs not to a delicate songbird, but to a sleek, black-and-white water bird. That's the haunting yodel of a male common loon, a sound that echoes across northern lakes where loons nest in summer. With his neck outstretched, the male waves his head from side to side, sending his eerie calls across forests and open water. The yodel entices females and asserts his claim to a territory. Common loons have a repertoire of different calls. Here's the tremolo. And this is the eerie wail. Loons vary the intensity of their tremolos and wails depending on the situation. Sometimes they sing only to one another in duets.
Hi.